Right, I'm afraid today's subject is totally above your heads. I'm sorry about that. It's just the way some of these sermons turn up. However, one of your number asked me last time to comment on this subject, and so I will, even though it's above my head as well. I'll explain shortly. And this sermon is for a certain member of this congregation, and also for John, who will be listening in a little bit later. Hi, John. Francis Bergen once humorously said that the Queen told him, never drop names. Think it through. The Queen told him, never drop names. But despite Her Majesty's wise advice, I will drop a name. I'll ignore the advice and drop the name Sir Patrick Caldwell Moore. Patrick Moore, CBE, Honours FRS. Fellow of the Royal Astronomical Society, 1923 to 2012, just short of his 90th birthday when he died. Some of you may remember the Sky at Night television program. Not all, I know, but Patrick Moore and the television program, The Sky at Night. A man who knew Einstein, Orville Wright, who didn't die, first man to fly. The brother, Wilbur, died earlier. Orville died in 1948. He knew Orville, he knew Yuri Gagarin, he knew Neil, and of course all the moon men, Neil Armstrong, as well as Rachmaninoff, other well-known people. I simply knew him as Patrick, so I'm dropping a name, aren't I? Because he taught me everything I knew or have forgotten about astronomy. A great friend of mine. I'll be brief about that name drop, just to give you my credentials for the sermon. Patrick Moore and I met over 60 years ago in 1955, 2 months before Einstein died. He died in March, I think, of 1955. Einstein, Patrick Moore had played the piano for him once in Canada when Einstein, who played the violin, wanted a pianist. So Patrick and Einstein knew each other. Patrick was 32 and I was 12. I wasn't even a teenager. My mother Muriel took me to the Hampstead Scientific Society in North London, where lots of different lecturers came along on lots of different subjects. And I was interested in astronomy from about the age of 8. My mother used to play the piano in an amateur way. She played the Moonlight Sonata, Beethoven, first movement. And I was looking at the moon, and the two kind of went together. I'd always had aspirations of being a concert pianist, but my life didn't turn out that way. It's another of my great interests. But astronomy certainly caught. And the Sky at Night program, that television program, came about 2 years before I met him, 2 years before the program came on television. It came on for its 55-year run in 1957. And Patrick Moore only missed one program out of 410 editions due to a dodgy goose egg which gave him salmonella poisoning and nearly killed him. But he only missed one out of 410, which was the Guinness Book of Records stat. I often stayed with him down at Godalming with his mother, Gertrude, who was a trained opera singer and artist. And we observed all night in the 50s, strengthened with lots of coffee. And UK weather, of course, often defeating us, especially as it does even today. Weather doesn't always be kind to astronomers when you want to see something of special importance. I was not always alone with him. I was at many times in those early days before he was known. But other people used to come along as well. And he was brilliant at teaching. He could fill a room of 500 people without raising his voice particularly or using a sound system. And Patrick Moore stayed with my parents and me in Golders Green in North London in those early days when he was coming up to do television programs in the late 50s. Remember him doing the washing up in our kitchen. And he knew Morecambe and Wise and most of the TV and radio charity shows and entertainment shows, Blankety Blank and In Our Time and all those other television and radio programs. A very British eccentric in the nicest possible way. Sometimes not in the most nice way, but eccentric in many ways. But also a very, very kind man was Patrick Moore. It's my privilege to know him. Ted Armstrong asked me to get him to come to Brickett Wood because there was an interest in astronomy in the World Tomorrow programs on radio that Mr. Armstrong was doing. And Ted Armstrong, when Patrick Moore came along, did not get to meet him because Patrick Moore realized when he came along at Brickett Wood 1969, the year of the moon landings, as happened just before that happened, he realized that his friend Tony Gowdy, or Anthony as he called me, had got caught up in a religious American cult. And that was enough for Patrick, and it broke our friendship for a few years, unfortunately. He had many friends, of course, as you know. I was just one of them. But I had known him for nearly 60 years before he died. And I have to say, I've had more hot dinners in his name than he's had hot dinners in my name. So I've been able to, have that as a little background to the interest that I have. One of the things he said, and by the way, we're talking about astronomy, which is above your heads and mine, and look at the Bible shortly and see some of these things of wonder. He said, it's not astrology. He said, astrology proves a scientific fact. I said, what's that? He said, astrology proves that there's one born every minute. In other words, it's a bit of a dodgy subject, astrology, and some people go by it and look at the stars for different purposes than Patrick Moore and his friends did. So I tried to get Patrick Moore and David Attenborough together because both were knights of the realm, both came along the scene of television when it was starting in the 50s. Sputnik was just up when Patrick Moore started The Sky at Night in 57, so it was all interesting. And I thought, with David Attenborough's interest in what was down here below the horizon and Patrick Moore's interest in what was up here, you actually have both spheres. And so I contacted David Attenborough. He said to me, he said, well, I'm very sorry, but I think it would be very nice to get together with Patrick Moore. And my idea was to have a program on Panorama, maybe, just an idea, to have these two knights of the realm talk about up there and down here. It might be interesting. But David Attenborough said, I think we both want to talk about ourselves too much. So the program never was made, but it was a thought anyway. I last saw him at his 40-year home in Selsey in Sussex about 4 months before he died, over after about 80 amazing years in astronomy, in active amateur astronomy. Amateur just means the love of the subject, but he always claimed he was amateur. And we had our usual hug as I left and had a photograph, which I treasure, and he said not to leave it too long before we met again. But he did die. It was not to be to see him again. The program still continues. Sky at Night, there's a magazine, about £5 an issue for about 7 or 8 years. Well worth it if you're interested in that sort of subject. I'll leave it here with the pictures of Great Baddo, which I usually bring with me for your interest. So Chris Lintott and Maggie Adeline Pocock continue the program. And it's still on television, as you might know, if you're interested in that sort of thing. So these are my credentials to talk about the subject of astronomy in the Bible. Way above our heads, of course, if I can use that as a pun. So hold on to your hats. Stargazing is one of our oldest occupations. Constellations, what? No, this is what Patrick Moore used to do. He used to rattle along, didn't he? So I had to not learn that from him. Stargazing, as we get into the subject, is one of the oldest human occupations and interests. The constellations, Orion, the Big Dipper, you know, and all the ones you might know, over 4,000 or 5,000 years ago were named, often by Arabics and Chinese and so on. The 88 constellations, north and south, the Bible talks about in Job 8, the Pleiades, seven sisters, little cluster of stars, talks about Orion, talks about Arcturus, a star. And of course, Jesus Christ saw all of this. Jesus Christ looked at the moon just like you and I look at the moon, because he made it. We'll come to some of that as we go. Sadly, the Catholic Church didn't help the subject of astronomy, because you may remember in Acts 1 and verse 11 for your notes, when the ascension was taking place and Jesus Christ was uplifted into the third heaven through the second heaven, first heaven, second heaven, third heaven, the disciples were, what? He'd levitate? What? And suddenly two angels beside them. What? Who are these? They could have been scared spitless, do you not think? But the angels said, well, why are you gazing up into heaven? He who went up is going to come again. And he said, why are you gazing up into the heavens? And Galileo got caught on that. The great astronomer Galileo, born on the same day, was it 400 years before Stephen Hawking? Galileo got caught on, no, Newton. Wasn't Galileo. Newton was born 400 years before Hawking. But Galileo was caught up by the Catholic Church, who said, look, it says in the Bible, Acts 1:11, you're not supposed to be looking up into the heavens. It says, what are you gazing up into the heavens for? Sadly, you know, And there was a great restriction on the fact the earth actually was round, not flat, and it wasn't the centre of the universe, and all those things that came with Copernicus later on, and the moons of Jupiter and so on that Galileo spotted first. So, as far as astronomy is concerned, Edwin Hubble, about this time, American astronomer in the 50s, started to understand that the nebulae we saw, these misty sort of patches of light, were not within our galaxy. And you go outside, you see the galaxy, you see the Milky Way, perhaps you don't. Light pollution means that many children and adults in large cities will not see the Milky Way. Milky Way is merely the faint outline of the ends of our Milky Way galaxy, this island universe. This is only one of many. It's like two fried eggs clamped together, and around the outside you've got the stars you see as the Milky Way, right round, just a cluster of stars together in a sort of a Milky Way, as well called. And some of the nebulae, the little fuzzy things that people saw in the 50s and earlier, were thought to be within the galaxy, within our Milky Way system, but they're not. Hubble realized they are out there. They are like our Milky Way, a long way out. So the universe started to expand as far as our understanding was concerned. It always was big. But we started to understand it was a lot more than what just was seen in our galaxy. And of course, we see now 15.7 billion light years, and I'll go through that very shortly, out to the observable, furthest observable universe that we can see, and so on. And we find things moving very fast away from us. Shall we just say the space in between is improving or increasing? So, like putting dots on a balloon, little dots all seem to move from each other. That's because the balloon is expanding. So space expands, and the galaxies seem to be moving away. And so we have the Big Bang, which has some problems attached to it, but it's the best model we have so far. You have dark matter, dark energy, which again is a working hypothesis. 75% of the universe, we don't know what it is because we don't see it, but it has to be there. Something has to be there for the acceleration of the universe as we see it, and of course all that Hubble Space Telescope has brought us. So this is a phenomenal universe, a shimmering latticework of energy, which God made. But I'm sure you have a sense of wonder. I think wonder's the important thing. I've known people who weren't the slightest bit interested in seeing an eclipse or a comet or aurora when I told them to go outside and have a look, you know, when I was away somewhere. They weren't interested in a little bit. James Henderson and Shirley were, but they went to Namibia. They travel a bit, as you know, and they were in Namibia in South African area. And he said, when he phoned up, he said 3 years ago, I looked at the sky, he said, it was just like all these, like diamonds thrown onto black velvet. Perhaps you've seen a really dark sky. I never have. I went to Australia in February, and I did see the Southern Cross. Peter Hoyt went to New Zealand about the same time of the year, a few years earlier, and he saw the Southern Cross. I saw Orion up here, where it's normally down here, and the Magellanic Cloud. I thought, wow, that's something to see. James Henderson said, I looked at the stars, he said, I thought of you. Not for long, he said, but I thought of you. that was all very interesting. So let's get some stats out the way before we get into the Bible and the wow factor. You can see about 6,000 stars, by the way, by the naked eye, down to magnitude 6. The stars are classed in magnitude. Down to 6. You see about 6,000 if you counted them all. God, of course, knows all the numbers and he knows the names. It just shows the majesty of God. But let's look at some stats just to get those out of the way. Because the universe is powerful, creative, beautiful, because God put it together. The speed of light is fixed. Einstein showed that it's 186,000 miles a second. We sort of know that as we know E equals mc squared. There are certain things we know and don't understand. But the speed of light means that the sun, if it was doused by a big bucket of water, just an analogy, would not go out to our eyes for 8 minutes. That's how long it takes light to travel from the sun on your face now for 8 minutes. From the moon, 1.5 seconds. I've driven for nearly 60 years, and all my mileage, and I do about 3 times average with my work, all my mileage together would take light 8 seconds to travel. Light is fast. 6 times round the earth in a second. between each of those, light has gone 6 times around the planet. So looking at that, perhaps we can improve on that and see how far we can go with it. The nearest star, Alpha Centauri, or Proxima Centauri, the light, which takes 8 minutes from the sun, will take 3 1/3 years, travelling at the speed of light, to get to our eyes. You probably know that. The nearest galaxy, which is Andromeda, which we thought was, you know, a nebula within our own Milky Way, Andromeda Nebula, about 2 million years for light to reach us from Andromeda, which is our nearest neighbour in space. To get to the other end of the universe, as we see it from one point looking outwards, of course you can look back, the same thing, 15.7 billion years light has taken. That's incredible when you think about it. 15.7 billion. And that's at the fastest speed that we know, the speed of light. How many stars, how many galaxies? Well, if you take a swimming pool, imagine an Olympic-sized swimming pool, right? And you put sand in it. Take out the water and put sand in. That's a lot of sand. Apparently it's something like 100,000 billion grains of sand. Each one would be a star in our Milky Way. Each grain of sand in an Olympic-sized swimming pool would be equivalent to, like our sun, which is only it's a special star to us, but it's not special as far as size or brilliance is concerned in the galaxy. Each one in the swimming pool would be a star in our own galaxy. That's how many stars we think there are in a galaxy with a black hole in the middle, motivating things. How many galaxies in the observable universe, what we can observe, do the same thing? Take swimming pool, look at the grains of sand. Now each grain of sand is a galaxy in that swimming pool filled with sand. That's pretty awe-inspiring, isn't it? That's pretty amazing if you think of the numbers are concerned. That's all that we see. But of course, size doesn't impress God whatsoever. Who are we? We're so small, you know. Somebody said about how small it appears that we are as human beings, when in fact God's far more impressed with you than he is with what he's created in the universe. James Jeans, an astronomer royal from 100 years ago, "Is this then all that life amounts to," said James Jeans, an astronomer, "to stumble almost by mistake into a universe which is clearly not designed for life, and to which to all appearances is either totally indifferent or definitely hostile to it? To stay clinging on to a fragment of a grain of sand until we are frozen off to strut our tiny hour on our tiny stage with the knowledge that our aspirations are all doomed to final frustration and that our achievements must perish with our race, leaving the universe as if we'd never been." We're doomed, Dad's army. Of course not. He's making the point that life has a purpose. It's not just happened by chance, as many people would think, and that we just have come from nothing and we go to nothing. I think it would be clear that God is a mathematician when you look at the way the universe is put together. If you think of the Fibonacci sequence, I think that's the right word, isn't it? Fibonacci sequence about pine cones and the geometry of things and so on. And some random thoughts. You know, we've only been so far as the moon now, which is not that far away, it's 250,000 miles away. And space is actually, you think of space, it's only really an hour's drive up. 50 miles up, you might average 50 miles an hour. I did 54 coming down to Cockfosters from Norwich this morning. That would have taken you into space. Not vast space or deep space, but away from the atmosphere of the Earth. And, you know, Aldrin and Armstrong needed 500,000 cars to get out of the Earth's gravity. The power of that rocket, the Saturn rocket, was equivalent to 500,000 cars driving upwards at a speed. By the way, Saturn rocket left the launch pad. By the time the end of it left the launch pad, it was already travelling at 100 miles an hour. I'm thinking 5 days to get to the moon. Some of these extraordinary thoughts. You take, again, this scale. Let's think of Winston Gemma. And his height when he's standing up would be, say, the diameter of the moon, of the sun. So here's Jima, the sun, that is his height, and that's the diameter of the sun, about 500,000 miles. You think of then how far Pluto would be away. This is the scale of the universe. The scale of the sun is like Winston Geemer's height. Pluto would be 4 miles away. Towards Elephant Castle. That's the furthest planet in our solar system. Nearest star? 2/3 away to New York. 2,500 miles away. If Winston Geemer is the diameter of the sun, the nearest star would be 2,500 miles away. Quite extraordinary. Let's just go then to some of these scriptures, and I think the first one I'll choose is Genesis chapter 1. That's a good place to start, is it not? Genesis chapter 1. I'm using the King James. I think you have up the NIV. Whatever it is, it'll make the same sense. Now, of course, I needn't look over my shoulder. Yet I don't need to. I tend to print some of the scriptures out, which are a little easier to get to quickly. And of course, we know this was written, it's not written for us, it's more written to us, because this was written under inspiration by Moses, from God, of course, round about the time of the Exodus, to show Israel who the true God was and is. Because Egypt wasn't a very good model for showing the true God, was it? All sorts of gods. Pharaohs, for a start. All caps and other things they found in Tutankhamun's tomb in 1921 with Howard Carter. Israel needed to be introduced to who God was. And so Genesis 1 is a poetic Hebrew. Now, if you want to take it literally, these are days, 24 hours. I don't want to get there. All I say is there are other options that you have to understand what the Hebrew is saying. My own feeling is that what's happening in Genesis 1, 2 and 3, these are functions. The function of the stars, the function of the flowers and so on, and the earth. But, you know, that's another subject entirely, and probably not a very good one for a sermon, because all I'd say is there are different models to look at without having to go only to literal understanding of the Hebrew poetic text. But here is the understanding, to give Israel an understanding of who the true God is. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Bet you've never heard that before. How familiar we are with this. And we know the earth was without form and void. Darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said in 3, let there be light, and there was light. And he saw the light, and it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. So we start to see Israel being educated about who the true God really is, the one and only God, in these three distinct but not separate ways of being as we are understanding it now. And then in 14, God said, after the third day, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and days and years. Interesting, the word sign, rule, something to measure things by. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and so it was. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. Probably sun and moon. Some people say maybe the Milky Way, but I think it's more natural he would say he made the sun during the day and the moon at night. And of course the earth would be totally uninhabitable if the moon wasn't there. That's another subject. But I rather like the end of 16. It says in 16, he made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. It's almost a throwaway phrase, brethren. Yes, I did this, I did that. Yes, I made the stars too. What? It's like it probably isn't, but it's almost like a throwaway verse, isn't it? You know? Yes, I made the stars as well. See, it doesn't impress God, because God isn't big, small, fat, thin, black, white, green. God is God. God is love. But he has a universe which is incredible. And we are embedded in that universe, but of course we know there'll be new heavens and new earth one day. But that's another subject, and maybe I can refer to it as we go. Interesting, the thing about to rule the day and to rule the night. Colossians 1.23, shall we go to Colossians 1.23? Jeff, if you can skip around a bit here. It's all right, I can read it. If you continue in the faith, said Paul to Colossae, grounded and settled, and be not moved away from the hope of the gospel. And people were being moved away from the hope of the gospel. Some are today too. Which you've heard, and which was preached to every creature which is under heaven, whereof I, Paul, am made a minister. Now you could say, well, what's that saying? You could say, well, in Paul's area, you know, where he travelled with the apostles, they've been pretty busy talking, Galatians, Philippians, Ephesians. They talked to lots of people, so the message went out. I'm looking at that and think, well, what was preached to every creature which is under heaven? Well, maybe, you know, it was just a local area. Or maybe there's something in the rule of the sky which can be a teaching tool, a lesson for you and me to learn something from, and not be like people who say, I wouldn't even bother. I'm not interested in all of that. Too many things to distract me around here. I'm more busy here than I am up there. You can get on with it. Missing out a bit of a wow factor. So maybe the gospel's been preached by the sun, moon and stars. How would that be? Well, have a look at that as we go. There's another verse I wanted to get to it. Yes, Psalms 19:1, Jeff. Should we go to 19:1? By the way, while we go there, it interests me that when there was a solar eclipse, have any of you seen a solar eclipse? I never have. Have you actually seen a solar eclipse? Where was that? It wouldn't have been a total eclipse in England, it would be a partial. I mean a total. It was, yeah. The only total one we've had recently was what down in Cornwall about 20 years ago, and it was a cloudy day. But I mean an absolute total where the moon covers the sun entirely. That's a fairly rare sight. We see the partial one. I know what you're referring to. The light goes dark. There's still some of the sun seen. But the moon is 400 times smaller than the sun and 400 times nearer. So it seems to fit the sun entirely. When that happens, which is a rare event, but maybe once every few years across the earth somewhere, very small band of totality, that is, to my mind, God saying, look at the wonder and the wow of this universe. Because you see the recording on YouTube of people who, in America, when they had a solar eclipse go over in America about a year ago, you hear people who've never seen a solar eclipse all out there with their dark smoky glasses, and they're wondering what's going on, and some have seen and some haven't, and the words get out. You're always told, don't look at the sun through a telescope, you'll lose your eye, so you will. Patrick Moore always used to say, never look at the sun through a telescope, you'll blind yourself, unless you've got a good filter on. Project it onto a piece of paper, you can see it better that way. You'll hear, as the shadow comes across the earth, the shadow of the moon on the earth is only about 15, 20 miles wide, and doesn't last for more about 5 or 6 minutes in any one area as it passes across the planet. But you'll hear people say, my God! In a very respectful way. They're not religious, but it just draws something out of people. Wow! I never have, but people who've seen it, and Patrick Moore saw probably about 10 or 15 of these as he travelled around to inform him for his program. But there's something, when you see something like that, an amazing fact of nature. What an amazing thing. What a coincidence that the moon just, yes, do you not think it could possibly be God making sure that when the time comes you can get a wow factor if you're in the right place? The people would be, you know, my God, look at that, it's such a spectacular sight. The people in tears, because of its beauty, its wow factor, despite all of the facts. 19:1, to the chief musician, the Psalm of David, the heavens declare the glory of God. We've seen this before and heard it before. And the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day utters speech. That's interesting. And night unto night shows knowledge. What's that mean? It's Hebrew, it's poetic. I would say there's something you can learn from looking at the sun, moon and stars. What does the sun picture? What would the moon picture? What would Venus picture? Apart from being a celestial body. Verse 3, there's no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. They don't talk. What are you talking about? Yes, but in picturesque, poetic, parabolic language, there's a teaching that can come. And therefore, any language, any voice on earth can understand it, like Acts 2, their Pentecost, all the nations hearing in their own language. Every person on earth has its own words about the moon and the stars. We see the same thing. Okay, when I was in Australia, we saw a different sky, but still the sky. Verse 4, their line is gone out throughout all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is like a bridegroom. Beautiful poetic words, isn't it? David under inspiration. I think it was David, isn't it? Coming out of his chamber and rejoicing as a strong man to run a race, is going forth. The sun is from the end of the heaven and his circuit to the ends of it, and there's nothing hid from the heat thereof. Rather Satisfactory to say that today, isn't it? Sure is nothing hidden from the heat thereof. So, you know, these are some thoughts about that. C.S. Lewis said once, and I thought it was a lovely phrase, he said, by the sun, you see everything else. Well, we see each other here. Why? Because I'm like, no, it's the sun. By the sun, S-U-N, we see everything else. We see each other. And of course he said, by the sun, S-O-N, we see everything else. So, as Christians, we can say that by Jesus Christ, we see everything else. It clears for us just what on earth, as I say, God is doing, how God works, how God operates, as far as we can understand it. So, you know, that's the glory of words that C.S. Lewis has thought about, by the sun we see everything else, is rather appropriate, rather accurate. By the way, today is, it happens, Asteroid Day. It sounds like a disease, doesn't it, like adenoids. It's Asteroid Day. People are very worried about the asteroids, which are these lumps of rock between Mars and Jupiter. So, mostly. So it's now a very appropriate subject for today. It's the fourth year that the International Science Society and Astronomical Society has celebrated and warned that, you know, one of these days, if one of those rocks comes out and hits us, we're in trouble. We've read all about this. Some people are very scared. More scared than they were probably with nuclear weapons and the bear pigs and so on, Khrushchev and Kennedy in the 60s. They're worried about a rock coming through, like 1908 in Tunguska in Russia, where a thing about the size of a quarter of this room, it was a comet actually, hit some wooded area, and 20 miles in all directions were flattened by this thing. And you go to a meteorite crater, the Barringer crater in Arizona, you can see where a meteorite hit thousands of years ago. But God, you know, God is not going to allow some of those things. It's up to God. We don't need to fear it. But if you don't believe in God, if you don't see everything else by the Son of God, who is the Creator, and then, of course, you would be concerned that some of these things might happen and we'll be fried in our beds, or it might kill us. Well, if that's what God decrees, at least God's decreeing it. But I think it's unlikely. But yes, today is Asteroid Day. You might catch it on the news. It's not something which most people want to know anything about anyway, but there are people who are afraid of some of these things. Interestingly, whether there's life elsewhere, somebody said, a chap called D. Thomas, a doctor of divinity about 100 years ago, our planet was probably formed for the special purpose of becoming the theatre of God's redemptive love to man. Small in bulk our planet is, compared with that of other orbs that roll in splendour under the eye of God. It is a grand moral distinction. It has a grand moral distinction. Its dust formed, its fruit fed, the body of the Son of God. Here he lived, laboured, suffered, and was buried. And here his grand work is being carried on. If it be moral facts that give importance to places, is there a more important spot in the universe than on this earth? Interesting. I would tend to feel that Christ came to this planet, the Creator came to this insignificant speck in a spiral arm of our Milky Way, and this is where it's starting. Because you remember, God says he inhabits eternity. Isaiah 57, is it? God fills out eternity. He inhabits eternity. So it's not big to God or small. God made these things. And it talks about a new heavens and a new earth. It talks about righteousness dwells within this new heavens and new earth. And he says, one day I'm going to just draw the old universe away like a curtain. Like you pull a curtain across a window and a new day will dawn. What we used to call, and still should perhaps call, the wonderful world tomorrow. And we'll have a part in that. Because I think this is where God is starting life. Now, I think things have developed over thousands of years. I'm not one of those people who hold to a 6,000-year-old earth. I don't decry people who do. It's not a matter of me being right and they being wrong. I choose from what's out there, the truth is out there, I choose to believe that things have developed over billions of years. This earth is about 3.5 billion years old, by what the scientists say. And we remember that the galaxy we can see, the furthest one for Hubble, is 15.7 billion light years away. Years. So the earth is very Johnny-come-lately when it comes to the age of the universe. But nevertheless, it seems like things are starting here on this planet. And you and I have an opportunity, as we sing these beautiful songs and as they emotionally impact us, and as we fellowship with each other and as we live our lives in our personal evangelism, that God is working with a group of people, most of whom on this planet, his beloved creation, will know nothing about these things, or will know a different God until the time comes for a resurrection. When, thankfully, this is not the only day of salvation, aren't we thankful that there are more times to come where people can understand things? That's not always seen, even within Christianity, especially within Christianity, that there's more time. It's not all going to happen in this world. That gives us sometimes what I call desperation evangelism. You've got to capture people. You've got to get out, beat the bushes, bring them in. Because if they die without Jesus, they go to the lake of fire and burn forever. They go to hell. They haven't heard the only name. They haven't heard the only name under heaven whereby mankind can be saved. They're absolutely right. But where they're wrong, in my understanding, is that there is more time. You believe that too. There's coming a time when everybody who's never heard the only name under heaven will live again, have their eyes opened, turn to Jesus, be forgiven their sins. And the biggest sinners, you know, she who's been forgiven most loves most. And people realize they've been forgiven by Jesus Christ without purgatory, without just suffer. Amazing grace, outrageous grace. Then who's going to be there to teach them? See, we in our first life are understanding some of these things. And the only purpose of this sermon really is to drop a name, yes, but also, importantly, to talk about the wow factor, the emotional aspect, to raise an interest. Get an app on your iPhone, it'll show you what the planets are and the stars are. You can get these free. It'll get an interest in these things. You have Mother's book. It does enhance the understanding of what God is doing, not just on earth but elsewhere. But we are in training with other Christians in different groups for the big party, for the big job, if I can be vernacular about it, for the future. Yes, for now. But when Christ comes back and marries the church, the bride and the groom, you know, the wedding feast, the gold, the golden slippers, the bride, all adorned for her husband, the bridegroom. These are pictures, aren't they? Now, maybe it is that. Maybe it's a lovely banquet, gold goblets. I'm not decrying it isn't, but your mind won't contain it. God speaks in terms that we can understand. He has earth speak, doesn't he? He has condescension in the nicest way. He talks in a language we thankfully does. But his reality is far greater than anything you and I can mine. Eye hasn't seen, ear hasn't heard, neither has entered into the heart of mankind the things that God has prepared for those who love him. But it says he has revealed certain things to us by his Spirit. Now we've been revealed some of those things. I'm saying what you know to encourage you. Not just for us to get into the kingdom on a cushion, you know, yeah, I'm going to be okay, I'm going to go to heaven. It's for other people too. Yes, it's for you. Yes, you're being developed in a personal way. Nobody's ever lived who's like you. Nobody ever will live like you. God's the individual handcraft, the potter that Peter was talking about. He loves individuals. He loves you personally. He knows you personally. You talk to him in prayer. You talk to the one who made the moon, sun and stars. That's a wow factor. And he wants to listen to you. And he knows you more than you know about yourself. He wants to hear you more. He's got all the time in the world for you because he made time. All of those things that we discussed before, perhaps, that I've been here. But God loves you. He knows some of your distresses and the things you've been through and the things you will be going through as time rolls. And he has us prepared as a group of people, because Christ is not going to do all the work by himself in the world tomorrow. He has a family, he has a wife, he has the church. And when people are resurrected, are we going to be watching Jesus Christ do it all? No. We're going to be pointing these people to Jesus Christ and say, look, I've been in these situations. I had cancer. My husband died. I was a terrorist once, and God helped me through some of these things. We're going to be there as people join the family looking to Jesus Christ to help the billions of people. You've heard this before, but it has to be a wow factor. 20, 30, 40 billion. How many people on earth? How many people at the time of the flood? I don't know. Maybe 100 billion. 100 billion people. Who's going to teach them? You're going to be there. Christ will use his bride. On this earth, yes. Is that it? Bottom line. Done it all. That's it. What now? What now? God inhabits eternity. The increase of his... Remember this one? Increase of his government knows no end. Isaiah? The increase of God's government knows no end. I don't think I'm taking scripture out of context, or I'm just saying it, taking it out in memory. Does that mean that we'll bring life to this dark universe, make it a bright universe? I don't know, but I would suggest that God's plan will go on forever, of which this little nucleus, this insignificant speck of dust, seen by a voyager looking back as it went out the solar system, that's another story you probably haven't got time for, this little insignificant speck of dust, like a baby in a manger with a heavenly host and the Star of Bethlehem. Insignificant, but look at the impact. You perhaps one day with a body, a resurrected immortal body which will never die, will be able to go out into this universe and bring life to the planets and to the galaxies and travel. I don't know, but do you not think we should expand our minds a little bit more? Because we're so limited in our thinking. We haven't got the letters in the alphabet to say the words. We haven't got the keys on the piano, Vanessa, to be able to play the tune, Jeff. We haven't got ability. We're limited. But the sky is bright and the Bible is clear with tremendous opportunities. So I was saying something about sun, moon and stars. What could we say? How could their line have gone out through all the earth and their voice heard amongst everyone? Well, if people look up and see the sun, what can they learn? Well, it gives us life. It couldn't be here without it, true. So we'll worship it. Okay, if you've got nothing better, I suppose you thank it for life. Yeah, in one sense you do. Sun worship. And people going out on Easter, by the way, are not worshiping. Christians going out on Easter morning, not worshiping the sun. You ask any Christian who go out to a sunrise service on Easter if they're worshiping the sun. They say, yes, S-O-N. To see Christ rising. That's another story, but sometimes there's some bad press about, oh, you know, it isn't a sun worship. No, people have been into worshipping the hosts of heaven. Do you go to the Old Testament, put hosts of heaven into your computer, it comes up many times. People worshipping the hosts of heaven. If you don't know God, you're going to have all sorts of different things to worship. So if you look at the sun, and we look at the sun, we can realize there's only one sun. There's only one God. Some star systems have two or three suns. Binary systems, you on a planet in imagination, you could see a sunrise here and a sunrise there, a green one, a blue one, different. There's only one sun. There's only one God. That's where light comes from, right? The light from God. He dwells in unapproachable light. Okay, so you could learn there's one God by looking at the sun. What would the moon tell you? Think of the moon. Well, does it shine by itself? No. If the sun went out, a second and a half less than 8 minutes, the moon would go out. 8 minutes from the sun, second and a half from the moon. Therefore, the moon shines by reflected light. We shine, as Daniel 12:3, isn't it, talks about when God makes up his stars. Perhaps you can go to Daniel 12:3, Jeff. I think it's 12:3, isn't it? We shine as stars because the moon reflects the light of the sun, and we reflect the light of the moon. Let's have a look and see if I'm right. Yes, 12:3. And they shall be what that be wise. Who makes you wise? Pardon me. God Almighty. Shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness. There is a responsibility to share what we have appropriately. Doesn't all have to be in this life, but it is in this life. As the stars forever and ever. And it talks about when I make up my jewels. That's probably in the same area there. You know, Daniel, when I make up my jewels, you know, this is how God regards us. He's not bothered about, oh, I made the stars also. That gives us a man alive. Look at the sun. Look what we're discovering. But God's not impressed by that. He's impressed with you. And your humble submission to him. And your acceptance of Jesus Christ as your Lord and Saviour and soon coming King. So the moon is a type of the church. The moon shines brightest when? During the day? No, at night. I'm just using thinking language here. This is a very dark world, isn't it? The moon sheds light on the earth. And we're part of that analogy of the moon being a type of the church, shining by the reflective light of the sun on this earth. And then you've got the planets, you know, Venus rises, something, it's so bright as a star, -4 magnitude, brightest thing in the sky when you see it in the evening or morning. before sunrise or sunset. You never see it at midnight because it's already set. It's close to the sun. It's in the planet is Venus. Very bright, cloud covered, reflects the light of the sun. And it talks about, you know, the sun of star of righteousness, the sun of righteousness rising with healing in his wings. There are the analogies in the Bible about the stars, about the moon, about the sun. So you could see how if people looked up and realised that there's more going on than just evolution by itself, even though I believe things have developed, but not without God behind all this, not without the love that God has, not without a benign, beautiful intelligence behind all of this, not wanting robots or cookie cutters, wanting individual handcraft as God's involved in, but God behind all this, directing as a mathematician how this universe is put together through the Son and by the Spirit. And you speak to this God every day in prayer. I don't think we can grasp that, but it's true. But we don't have the brain cells to kind of cope with the fact that all of this amazing stuff with creation, macro and micro, even the microscopic world and the macro world of the universe, we talk to the one who made all of that and wants to hear from us particularly. And by the way, while I'm on it, I think I said this before here, the universe out there is pretty deep and vast from our perspective, right, as we see space-time. The universe into the micro world, to the atoms and new mesons and the quarks and everything else, is as far down there, brethren, as the end of the universe as we see it is out there. That distance in scale is the same as that distance in scale. It's almost like mankind is in the middle, size-wise. And I think that's rather amazing. And we are made of star stuff, by the way. You do realise that God has allowed stuff to happen before the earth was formed, and stars explode, supergiants, and cast out their heavy metals and material into the universe. And there's no doubt in our bodies we are made of star stuff. Now you might think, oh, you're just into evolution again without God. No, I'm not. But there are things within our bodies which can only have been made under extreme pressure and heat. And that only comes from stars that implode, get to the end of their life and then explode, supergiants, nova, and spread out these precious metals into the universe. There'll be precious metals out there for us to work with if that's where eventually God brings his beloved family, always growing, into the far depths of this universe to bring light and to bring a new heavens and a new earth wherein will dwell righteousness. So we're made of star stuff. Rather extraordinary, you think about it. There are some of the scriptures, as we need to start drawing this to a close, there are other scriptures I have here, other stats we could give, but I just printed some others out here that I think you might find interesting. What have I got at the end here? Abraham was told to go out and count all the stars. For your notes, you might want Genesis 15:5. He went out and looked up, just as you do if you can get out of a city, and was told that your seed will be as many as the stars of heaven. And God says he knows them all by number and by name. And he talks about the stars of heaven for multitude. The increase of God's government, we mentioned that. By faith we understand that the... Let's go to Hebrews 11:3, Jeff. That by faith, says Hebrews' author, we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God. Remember that one? In other words, he spoke and it was done. That's Jesus Christ. Talked to him recently, didn't you? So that the things which are seen were not made of things that do appear. Hebrews 11:3. Through faith, we didn't work this out. It's the faith of God. Okay, we have faith in the faith of God, you understand me. We understand that the worlds were worlds, right, out there, were framed by the word of God. The Logos, the revelatory thought. Yahweh, the God of the Old Testament, the rock that followed them, that rock was Christ. Right? The second in the Godhead. God himself. So that things which are seen, oh yeah, look. The things which are seen, they weren't made of things that appear. But made from nothing. Ex nihilo, yes. This, you know, looks pretty solid to me. I won't kick it, sorry. This looks pretty solid to me. I wouldn't want to fall on that from the top of the roof. But it's only a lattice work of shimmering energy. This is made to look solid. But it's what we call a phenomenal universe. Phenomenal things. Underneath all of this is a shimmering lattice work of energy, mathematics, God's mind and love for his creation. Somebody said once, you know, this universe is, it's like a string vest. You wear a string vest this weather, you know, there's not much to it except the string. He says, like a string vest without the string. There's nothing there really, is there, you know? But, you know, the atmosphere of the earth in which we live and move and have our physical being, if you took it all and compressed it down to the atoms, it's the size of an orange. It's pretty amazing. Take away all the space in the atmosphere that we have, all the oxygen and nitrogen and everything else, and compress it down, you hold your hand. See, God, what an incredible... This has all just happened. Oh no, it just happened, you know, billions of years, and things sorted themselves out rather nicely. There you go. The blue planet too, very, very nice. You know, it's amazing what can happen given enough time. What it is, but you have to put the mind of God, the beauty and the glory of the love that God has, because God doesn't have love. He is love. If he had love, he might not love it sometimes compared to another. He is love, and he loves you enough to reveal some of these things to us. So that was Hebrews 11:3. Counting the stars, Galileo, we've looked at that. If you can break my covenant of the day and my covenant of the night, in Jeremiah 33, and that should be not day or night in their season, then may my covenant be broken with David my servant. God shows the strength of his covenant to say, I think the day and night's going to continue, don't you? Well, that's my strength of covenant towards David, and of course an extension everyone eventually, and with the Levites, the priests, and the ministers. As the host of heaven cannot be numbered, neither the sand of the sea measured, so will I multiply the seed of David my servant and Levites that minister to me. That's Jeremiah 33:20-22. I do like 2 Peter 3:10, which to us is good news. 2 Peter 3:10. Let's throw that one up, Jeff, please. This is good news to us, but people reading this will think this is not good news. What does it say? 3:10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise. Don't know how that works. Which heaven? Well, more than one, obviously one and two. With a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works therein shall be burned up. Doesn't look very good news, does it? What does fire do to gold? Makes it even better. Is it possible that burning off, scraping off the 6,000 year rule, how many years mankind has been in its present form, scraping off all of that under the heel of Satan and starting again all the works of mankind. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in all holy conduct and godliness? Well, the way you are, aware that's how our responsibility is. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, verse 13, look for new heavens and a new earth wherein dwells righteousness. Wherefore, 14, beloved, seeing that you may be found of him in peace without spot, seeing you look for such things. Now, to most people, whoa, take that away, that's destruction of everything we've done. Seeing you look for, Christians, seeing you look for these things, be diligent that you may be found in him, of him, in peace, without spot and blameless. You know, you're making yourself ready. You're working at your salvation that's been given to you, the things we've heard. Even as our beloved brother Paul also, according to the wisdom given to him, has written to you. And it says he's a bit hard to understand. The next verse says, some things are a bit hard. Paul writes rather hard. But that's rather an interesting comment, isn't it? But you know, 2 Peter 3, new heavens, new earth is coming. And it's mentioned in other areas as well. It's mentioned in Isaiah 65 and 66, the same phrase, new heavens, new earth. So something is coming along. And so we do look for such things. Psalms 104:2 in my notes, just to get what I've got here. Who covers yourself with light as with a garment, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain. Psalms 104:2. And of course 147 that Peter read to us before the sermon. Psalms 8, we had to go there. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and stars, which you've ordained for something, don't you? What is man that you're mindful of him? It's a good question. Speck of dust. You know, caught in a sunbeam. Wasn't Voyager turned around and took its camera back as it came out of the solar system back in the 70s? And it caught a little speck of light near the sun, which was the moon, was the earth. Just a speck of dust caught in Carl Sagan. Famous Carl Sagan, dead now, astronomer. Great popularist. Brian Cox, who we know on television, very great fan of being taught the things that Cosmos, that series of on television that was brought by him. Where was I going with this one? Where's that? You've made me the Lord of the Angels. New heavens and new earth. Isaiah 57. I was in Psalms, wasn't I? Yes, here we are. Psalms 8. Sometimes not the best thing to print out the scriptures. When I consider the heavens, the work of your fingers, what is man that you are mindful of him? Verse 4 of Psalms 8. And the Son of Man that you visitest him. How did God visit us? Through Jesus. For you've made him a little lower than the angels, you remember, and have crowned him with glory and honour. You made him to have dominion over the works of your hands, and you put all things under his feet and her feet. So the angels aren't going to have the opportunities that we have. They're very important. But this is who we'll be, the bride of Christ, having a part in rebuilding this universe, shattered as far as the earth is concerned. We're so used to what horrors go on this planet. Hopefully not too shell-shocked and too drunk with all that we read and get to compassion fatigue. Is that what it's called? Compassion fatigue, that we forget what a dreadful world Satan is performing on this planet through human beings. One day when that's all scraped off and he's chained and everything else, and then it's going to be a very different world, and a beautiful world as well. And every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights. James 1:17. With whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Remember that verse? The planets rotate. They show a dark side and a light side, don't they? The planets rotating. Well, God says he's not that way as a God. Every good gift comes from the Father of lights. And there's no variableness with him. He's shining all the time. So there we go. I go on and on and on, but I won't. So, I just hope that that's given me again. I won't give this afternoon, I'll do something else. Well, if you did request the subject, so I thought I'd have a go. I might give it next week in Great Baddow. But there again, there's a lot to talk about. But maybe you can take a soundbite away. Sometimes with a sermon, you just take away a thought. Francis Bergen said on Pentecost, something I remembered, the sermon was great this year. He said, Satan hates people. I thought, that's right. I took that soundbite away from his sermon on Pentecost. Satan hates, he sure does. And then I took one from Barry Robinson, where Barry was saying, God loves cities. Cities? Camberwell, London, Elephant Castle. Why? Because that's where people are. That's where our example can go, right? Now, we love the countryside as well, but you're not going to have too many converts out in the field. Well, either way, God won't have too many converts through you where there aren't people. Little sound bites like that. Somebody else said, I gave us a Bible study on the omnipotence of God in Bridlington last year, and Davis took away a sound bite. God has no history. That's interesting. Just a little sound bite. The rest, I don't know what else he talked about, Sturck would say about my sermon, but I took away that little bit. But maybe with this, you might be able to take something away. You could have amazing space, couldn't you? Instead of amazing grace. that's something you could do. But take away a soundbite. Something perhaps that will remind you of the sun, stars, and moon, and everything else. Heavens above. There's one. Wow! There's another. But something perhaps to give you an idea. But anyway, I thought I'd drop a name. My dear friend Patrick Moore, I miss him very much. In one way, in astronomy, it's like clapping with one hand. I've lost my mentor, as so many other people have. But it's been my privilege to meet him and have a connection back to Einstein and all these other people. But there you are, that's a sermon, and I told you it would be above your heads.